everyone out there in podcast land. Welcome back to the Front Row Podcast here on the NPR Illinois, the podcast for people who actually like movies. And we are here with another episode of Full Disclosure. And honestly, something that we didn't think we were going to record, but damn if we didn't, might have just seen the best thing of the year here on Netflix. And we decided we had to talk about it. I'm Jeremy Geckman, the editor-in-chief. Here with me, my favorite podcast recording partner, sorry, Craig and the crew, my wife, Sarah Baltusevich-Geckner.
Yo, yo, Craig and the crew. He has to say that.
Yeah, yeah. Contractually obligated to say that. So, Sarah, we are here to talk about the new Netflix limited series, The Queen's Gambit. And I believe you had a very different reaction to this when it first came out as to your willingness to watch it. Why don't you let everyone know what that was?
It's like, it's a chess movie. It's like there's a musical about chess, and it's the most boring musical
ever.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
It's a chess movie, but then my mom watched it, and she's like, it's really pretty good. And I was like, okay.
Okay, we'll watch the first episode.
And I just finished The Office for, like, my seventh viewing of the year, so I didn't really have anything else to watch.
Right, so then you have to even it out with something new. Right. And then you can watch The Office again.
Right, I have to watch The Office one more time before it goes off Netflix. I mean, the biggest tragedy of 2020.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, yeah, I was kind of the same way, though. Like, I saw the trailer for it, and I thought, oh, that looks interesting, you know, but, you know, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff to watch.
It definitely looked, like, interesting, but I was like, as far as subject matters go, a film about chess does not exactly thrill me.
Right.
So I was like,
And honestly, there's not been a lot of, you know, chess movies or series that have been necessarily like, I don't know, just like exciting or something.
There have been, quality
movies. You know, Searching for Bobby Fischer is a very good movie. You know, Pawn Sacrifice a couple years ago was pretty good with Tobey Maguire. But, you know, like, no, there's never been something quite like this one. And that's honestly where I would start off there is just, you know, so it's a 7-part series. Each episode is about an hour, somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour. So, but 7 episodes, the series stars, Anya Taylor-Joy as, Beth Harmon. And so this is a story and it's based on a novel that was released in 1983 of the same name. God, I just looked up
Walter
the author's
Tevis?
Name. Walter Tevis?
Tevis?
Tevis? So it's based on this novel. So this is not an actual true story. This is something that we were wondering at the same time, but it's more kind of like that true adjacent because there's kind of, I can see similar like versions of, you know, Bobby Fischer's story in here and, you know, some of the other Russian champions at the time. Cause this is obviously taking place in the 1950s and 60s primarily. So there's like kind of history adjacent stuff here, but this is a narrative that is completely fictionalized.
Right. It's like Titanic, like events are true, but like the character's not real.
That's a good comparison there. But as I said, it stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Beth Harmon, and she is an orphan living in Kentucky, I think Lexington, Kentucky.
And then a threw-in home for girls.
Yeah, and so her mom is killed in a car accident, and she has no father, so she goes to live, as you said, to the Methuen home for girls. And while there, her mother, we learn, was a math prodigy of some kind.
Yeah.
So very,
PhD,
very smart.
PhD, just like one of those people that is just like has too much brain power.
Yes. And the show actually expertly uses like a lot of flashbacks to her time with her mother to kind of explain that she was brilliant, but also a little bit imbalanced
her
in the
brilliance
head.
Kind of made her nuts.
Yeah. And it's kind of like that fine line that you walk between art and madness, you know, or genius and madness. And clearly the madness took over her mother a little bit too much. But she's sent to this orphanage, and while there, one day when she's cleaning the erasers because she finishes her tests way faster than the others, she finds this janitor down in the basement in his workshop area, Mr. Scheibel, and she notices that he's playing chess on his own. And so after a few more chance encounters there, she eventually kind of asks if she can play, and Mr. Scheibel starts teaching her the game.
Yep. She learns from him, and you know he's very... He's like the only one in the place besides some of the girls that reaches out to her, but he does it at a distance still.
Yeah.
But
he's very reserved. He's a very reserved
person. But he
person.
Teaches her chess in such a way that, you know, he can tell that she has a gift, but he doesn't coddle her.
No, not at all. I mean, he like doesn't, the first time they play, there's no like explaining what it is or anything. He just kind of And honestly, he has to be kind of convinced to let her play. You know, the only reason he does is because, you know, eventually when she asks again, he asks her, you know, like, do you even know, like, how these pieces move? And she's able to say that just from her limited viewings of him playing himself. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where he's like, all right, let's play. And you're right. There's no coddling. There's no like, oh, you should actually do this. He just beats her. She learns and continues to go.
And the other aspect of it is that at this home, they give the girls these medications. Yeah. And one of them's a vitamin, but the other is like a trank.
A tranquilizer, it seems. Yeah. But somehow this tranquilizer has an effect on her because she takes it at night at the behest of a friend of hers. Mm-hmm. There. And she kind of like, and this is one of the best, most creative visuals in the entire series,
cool.
Which is that one night in bed, as she takes this tranquilizer, as she's looking at the ceiling, she kind of sees through like shadows through the windows, like the squares of a chessboard. Mm-hmm. And she starts visualizing the chess pieces. And
so she can like see the moves of the game. Like,
yeah, she starts visualizing all of
on
that.
On the ceiling.
Yes, but we learn that she's dependent on the pills to make this happen.
So she starts hoarding them and taking them from her friend Jolene, and anyone that'll give them to her is just kind of like,
right,
is kind of like reliant on them.
Yeah, exactly. And so from there, I don't want to get like, you know, very, very like go through every episode, but
no.
From there, it's basically, you know, the kind of just rise and fall of her career in chess.
Right.
You know, she eventually gets adopted. Mm-hmm. And she starts playing in tournaments, and this is where people really start to see that this is a prodigy here and that she is something special.
Mm-hmm.
And that just leads to bigger and better tournaments, money making, and eventually
meeting
she develops
and having relationships
this
with other prominent chess players.
Yeah, and eventually this leads to a big rivalry that kind of goes throughout like the last four or five episodes with the not like a hardcore rivalry, but just like more of a mental one. Like,
it's kind of like
a Mount Everest type thing. It's just like of trying to beat the long-standing world champion, the Russian what's his first name?
Vasily
Borgov. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's got a couple of encounters with him, but it all leads up to, of course, the culminating chess match at the end. And we will leave it there for now. But so, Sarah, like, you know, this is a movie. Or God, why do I keep saying movie? It feels like a movie. That's why, I think.
And as we're, The Office on Netflix right now is the chessboard.
This is the chessboard one. So this is meant to be.
It really is.
But, you know, Sarah, like, you know, we're talking about a miniseries here about chess. And you and I both had the same reaction, which is like, it's amazing how exciting they make not only the games like sound, but also just like the learning of chess and stuff in this series.
Yeah, they literally make like chess players like celebrities in this. It's so funny.
Which they kind of were back in the 50s and 60s,
right. Like,
you know, like there was a big thing.
How, like, it's chess, like, you know, like, but they make it is. I mean, chess is very difficult. Chess is a very mental game.
Yeah.
And like these, and it's just crazy to see how, like, how much they study it and how much work and like mentality and effort goes into playing and winning a game. But yeah, they just really like, they make these games like you're just sitting there going like, oh my God. Is she going to take his quick?
I know, right?
Oh, my God. Is she going to move to a pawn move? Is she going to open with a Sicilian? Like, yes.
Yeah. We all know the opening moves, like the various game
modern
types.
Chess openings.
Yeah, modern chess openings. The Sicilian, the reverse Sicilian.
Oh.
But yeah, and it's like
Sicilian.
And I got to give a lot of credit to the screenwriter and the director of all seven episodes, Scott Frank. He directs these games in such a way, and also I don't know who did the score for that. Sarah, try and look that up for me while I'm talking here, because the way that he directs these episodes is just so incredibly visceral in a game that we're like literally looking at, you know, that we're literally looking at, you know, just people moving pieces around a board and everything. It shouldn't be as exciting as it is. Carlos Rafael Rivera is the composer, and the way that Frank shoots these, shoots these sequences mixed with Rivera's music there, it makes for such an exciting thing, because you're right, you're watching these games and you're on the edge of your seat. It's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And I'm very grateful that in the course of this, because Borgov Kasparov isn't the only rival she has. You know, at first it's the very first tournament she plays in.
Harry Beltic,
played by our boy Dudley Dursley from the Harry Potter series. What's his name? I can't ever remember the actor's name.
I knew you were going to ask.
I know, but I want to really give him his
because like, we saw him, we're like, oh, dude, it's Dudley. It's Dudley Harry Melling.
Harry Melling?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Harry Melling here. He is, you know, and again, this is such a great way of doing this, but, you know, that's like her first rival there. And then she has another one, Benny Watts, who's kind of like this, the only way to say it is like a charismatic chess pirate, I guess. But he becomes like her new rival for a long time, but then he also becomes her ally and trying
Thomas
to make her
Brody
the best.
Sangster.
Yeah. From,
still looks like a small child.
Still
a
looks like Love Actually.
With
his
a
kid.
Mustache
yeah.
strapped on, it's awkward.
That kid is not aging at all.
Not really, though.
But, you know, like, so, and but they keep giving her like these new rivals to try and topple over before she even gets to Borgov.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when she's a teenager and she goes to her first tournament, oh, you can't beat Beltic.
Yeah.
Then it's, oh, Benny Watts is going to be at this tournament, you know? And then it finally evolves into like the Russians, the Soviet players that are like the best players in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, she just has like this innate ability to play and win that like even like her like toughest rivals are like just kind of like she's a marvel.
Yeah, and that's actually a good segue to talk about the performance by Anya Taylor-Joy here. So, I mean, she's been an up-and-comer in Hollywood for a while now. She obviously burst onto the scene with Robert Eggers' The Witch from a couple of years ago.
She's been doing
the M. Night Shyamalan movies of Split and Glass.
Yes.
And, you know, she was most recently in the superhero film The New Mutants. She did another one, Morgan, a couple of years ago in a psychological thriller.
She did the Emma.
Yeah, she did that Emma show, you know, Peaky Blinders for a little bit. So she's really been, you know, building a really big resume here over the last couple of years. But I really think this might be like the best thing I've seen her in because the way... You're right. Like the complexity of this character is, you know, it's kind of like what you would normally think of chess itself anyway. You know, it's like kind of cold. It's very calculated. She doesn't show hardly any emotion the entire series. Only when she loses is really the time where you see it. But she goes through a whole, not pun intended, gambit of emotions throughout the entire course of the series.
Yeah. I mean, she... You know, from a small child in an orphanage to, you know, she's adopted by this kind of cold couple. It seems at first the husband leaves and then the wife becomes a pretty good mother to her besides the fact that she's a raging alcoholic.
Well, yeah. But
she really does like take an interest in her and starts making sure she gets to these tournaments. And at first you think like, okay, she's just doing this for financial gain, but no, she becomes really interested in her daughter's career and she kind of propels it forward. But
it's kind of is like her only ally as well.
But you know, she loses her too to hepatitis, which is, you know, rough for her. And then she goes through a horrible battle with drug and alcoholism.
Yeah. And those were really great to see because, you know, a typical, like, look, and like it or not, it still kind of follows the narrative of a sports movie, a typical sports movie, which is, you know, hero, rise, challenge, but the difference here is that there's so many different layers to it, and that the rises are kind of like mini, and then the falls are really steep, and then the rises are a little bit more, and then the falls are really steep. I think that's the beauty of doing this as a 7-part series, is that you don't have to cut corners with a story like that. You know, you don't have to... You get all these rich context scenes where you kind of like build on why she is the way she is. You know, obviously, you know, the way her mother raised her before she died, you know, with the flashbacks and stuff, there was a lot of stoicness. There's a lot of intellectualism. So there's not a lot of time for emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when she gets into the orphanage, she kind of does have to fend for herself a bit. So there's no time for emotions. And then, you know, she's playing a game that's not predicated on emotions. So she becomes even more robotic.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, as the life events slowly start to happen to her, you know, stuff that needs to elicit emotional responses, you know, she still can't quite understand how to deal with those things. So even when she's faced with something, you know, like getting kicked out of her house, you know, she still has just got this icy reserve that, you know, just kind of doesn't speak to the actual moment that she's in.
Yeah, kind of the same thing with any relationship she has. I mean...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
has, every time she gets into any kind of romantic relationship, it's kind of like she puts chess above any feelings.
Right.
And that's kind of like what the Harry Beltic character, because I think they have, like, the longest kind of relationship, because he moves in with her and they yeah. start, you know, he really is in love with her.
Yeah.
But, you know, it comes to the point where, like, she loves chess more than she can have love for any other human.
Yeah.
And he realizes that and leaves. But
it's also kind of a crutch for her, too. You know, it's also kind of a crutch so that she doesn't have to deal with the real emotions right. that she's feeling.
Right.
And, you know, all of that is really bottled up until the second to the last episode, actually, really, when we learn that Mr. Scheibel has died. But we'll get into that scene in a second. But, you know, just the way that Anya Taylor-Joy plays a lot of those things, and the fact that we don't really get to see the genuine human emotion until the very end of this series, I think is a great choice by her, because it's mostly just a person who doesn't know how to deal with life emotions trying to make sense of them like a chessboard does. And if you remember, like, that interview she does with Time Magazine in one of the early episodes, you know, she says, like, I like the chessboard, it's safe, I can control it, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of really speaks to her character choices, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh. Yeah.
Did you want me to expand on I had something else to say about that. I don't know if I did.
Okay. So, but I also want to, like, say one last thing there about Harry Beltic,
Harry Melling
there. You know, I think, again, it's a very great choice to cast him, because when we first meet him, he's got a giant arrogance that we recognize from the Harry Potter movies.
Well, like, he's the best in the area. He hasn't had any challenges.
Right. And, like, so, like, when she, you know, this is her first tournament and everything, and, you know, she's playing against all the other girls and then all the other lower ranked guys, everybody's writing her off, even the twins at the table that become her, like, some of her best friends.
Put her in the beginner group and she's like, I'm not a beginner. And they're like, what's your rating? She's like, I don't have a rating.
I don't know. Yeah, she doesn't really know any of this stuff when she first starts. She just knows she's good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he, like, shows up late and, you know, he's, like, yawning through the game and everything. Mm-hmm. And she literally just schools him. But what I love about, like, choosing him in that part is that then when he becomes, like, her lover and her ally trying to teach her more things and deepen her game, you know, we get this genuine sense of, like, kind of love and longing, and, like, we literally find him cute and find him, like, adorable, and we're rooting for him. And I find that just so amazing that they do that with, you know, a character that, and an actor that we recognize as someone that's kind of reprehensible from what we most know him as.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we probably haven't looked far enough into Harry Melling's career to know.
He hasn't done a ton.
We're kind of pigeonholing him as Dudley Dursley, but
that's what he's most known for.
What we've seen, but yeah, he does he's very humble and he's just a very sweet character, and he's kind of a leaning post for her throughout, and
he has a great, like, because there's a whole episode where she's spiraling out of control and he's kind of the one.
There's, like, a couple.
Yeah, well, but I mean, like, the big one, where he, like, comes back and he's trying to, you know, say he's worried about her and that she needs to get some help, but
yeah.
It's a very well-written scene where he's not, like, really accusatory. He's very gentle, and he literally has this whole line. He's just like, you know, my father drank. He wasn't mean or anything, but he just drank and passed out in his clothes, and he would never get help. And it's like, just those gentle moments like that are really, I think, what propels Beth to want to, you know, do something about it, even if that's not the ultimate thing that pulls the trigger.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just, you know, she goes on the defensive and kind of, like, makes fun of him for working at a grocery store. And he's like, I like my job.
Yeah.
I like the people.
It's good.
I like
the people
where
are
I
nice.
Am.
Yeah.
You know, and she really, man, like, she, like, chugs bottles of red wine.
I'm telling you, man.
Gag worthy. Like, the amount of liquor that she can consume is just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, she turns it around, because there is a scene in, like, I think the second to last episode where she plays Borgov for the second time
in Paris.
And she's so drunk.
Or hungover.
It's so awkward. It's just like,
it's very awkward.
Yeah. And so, like, that's kind of becomes a turning point. And yeah. So he's really good. I think, there's another guy that she kind of falls in love with, Towns, who's another player,
right,
who she meets at that first match too, that she has kind of always been attracted to, who ends up being gay.
Yeah.
And they end up forming a really kind of cute friendship by the end, but yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about that a whole ending 20 minutes.
And then she has the relationship with Benny too. And then there's always, like, you know, there's, like, the twins and Benny's friends. So, like, the friends that she makes along the way are really, like, they're helpful for the storyline too, as is her friend Jolene, who she kind of relied on
in the orphanage,
who makes a surprise appearance in the last episode, which is kind of nice.
And you called out there, again, like, a great bit of writing and direction by Scott Frank is that because Beth is just good, because she's just like really, really good, but she hasn't like been raised to be a chess prodigy or anything like that. She doesn't know this world. And so literally we get to discover the world of chess with her, yeah. You know, and through these characters, through the twins, through Benny, you know, we progressively learn more and more advanced things about chess theory and how the game is played and stuff. And it all flows so naturally because it's literally Beth having to find this stuff out, even though she is very, very good. She doesn't know, you know, like what the terms are. She doesn't know like what the, like there's that sequence in her very first tournament where, you know, they tell her like, oh, it's like a 40-120 thing. And mm-hmm. then that's basically like 40 moves,
she doesn't
2 hours
know
on
how
the
to
clock.
Use a clock.
Yeah. She doesn't know what these things are. And like literally just by that simple mechanism of her not being raised in that world, now we have a natural narrative way to explain the world of chess to us. And that's just a very, very good thing that Scott Frank put in there.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think, like, how involved it is, the world of chess, though. Because, like, I had no idea.
Absolutely. Like, well, didn't Anya Taylor-Joy say something like that?
Yeah, she had a quote about, like, because she had to study, like, and she's like, you know, I had to, like, make myself believe I was a great chess player, and by the end, I kind of was.
Yeah.
You kind of have to be to study it and to be able to shoot it, because mm-hmm. there's just so many things that go into chess. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm glad that they... You know, also play with, you know, the rise and fall aspect of this, that they don't pull any punches with that. That, you know, when she is spiraling out of control, it looks like, you know, a drug and alcohol addicted person, you know. And the fact that, you know, like it's Anya Taylor-Joy that it's Beth that we've been here with her, it makes it all the more painful. But it also makes the rise back up to the ultimate triumph all that better in that last episode.
Yeah, in the last episode when she, like, says no to vodka, you're like, yeah!
Yeah!
She flushes
screw alcohol!
Like, good job!
But, you know, and this is the other thing that really kind of surprised us about this is, like, there were a lot of tear-jerking moments near the end of this series, you know, like when she goes back from...
cried three times in a chess movie.
I know, right? But it's like the moment where she goes back to Mr. Scheibel's office after his funeral and mm-hmm. sees that literally he's been, like, tracking
her career.
He's, like, kept all of her news clippings.
He has an entire wall just of, like, articles and clippings and pictures of her. And she had, like, the first tournament that she ever entered, it was like a $5 entrance fee that she didn't have.
Right.
So she wrote him a letter for the money and saying she would pay him back and give him more if she won.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He sent her the money, but he has that letter
on
the wall.
He kept the letter, and there was a picture that a high school chess team teacher, like, took of them when she was 9 years old and first learning, and it was there right there on the wall with her.
Yeah.
And that's really the first time where she shows any emotion, you know, where she kind of feels the... kind of the weight of what she's given up, you know, or what she's been denied in her life. She's had a lot. She's made money playing chess. She's one of the most recognizable chess players in the world. She's having people having people want to pay her way to Russia to play in the world championship. But she's never, you know, she's only really once or twice had those allies that would be there for her no matter what. And, you know, both of them were kind of taken away, one in the form of adoption, one in the form of death with her adopted mother.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Scheibel the same way, you know, she was not allowed to play chess with him anymore after she tried to steal all the tranquilizer pills mm-hmm. from the medical cabinet
yeah.
And OD'd herself at the same time. But, you know, it's kind of like seeing that picture is like she realizes that this is kind of the only support she's ever really had.
Well,
that didn't
there
meet,
was somebody
wasn't
there
conditional.
That did care about her. Like,
yeah.
You know, he did. It went beyond just teaching her to play chess. He was extremely proud of her.
Yeah, exactly. And so that leads to that's kind of the mechanism with which she finally is able to, like, get her life back on track and, mm-hmm. you know, stop messing around with booze and alcohol. And you're right, through the her friend,
Jolene,
who comes back and helps her out.
She gives her the money to go to Russia.
Yeah, but that whole sequence in Russia, you know, she's going up against these huge players, world champions all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you called out, she has like a, what might probably be the semifinal match against who we called Sheepdog Man because of his crazy hair. But, you know, like it all of a sudden, this whole thing where we think it's going to kind of be like this really contentious battle kind of turns into like this fun, like, not fun, but like meaningful passing of the torch
to her.
Well,
because up until that point, it's like, most of them don't know that she speaks Russian, that she's taken, because she took a Russian course. Yeah. And so she can hear what they're saying, and most of them are just, you know, kind of like dismissive about her.
Yeah, saying like, she looks like Anne Margaret.
Yeah, she, you know, we can just do this and she's done. Like, you know, they don't give a lot of consideration to her as a player when she gets there.
Right.
But then after she keeps winning, and once she comes to, gets to an adjournment with this, with Sheepdog Man.
Yeah. Sorry, guy. I'm sorry.
Which means they like pause for the night and then come back and finish the match the next day. And when she you see a scene where he and Borgov are strategizing over the board, and you think that he's just like really nefarious with Borgov trying to just find any way to defeat her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come back and she beats him in like 2-3 moves, and he looks at her and he says, "I resign with relief."
With relief.
And he has like this big smile on his face.
Yeah, and it turns out this is like a very big chess legend that she's like studied his games for a long time.
And then he tells her like, "You are a marvel, you know, mm-hmm. you should be so, you're such a," he's like, "You know, I'm going to look back on this as one of the, you know, best matches of my life." And he tells her that he's studied her games too, which is,
I know, it's
huge.
So adorable. Look, so, we're tearing up right now. It's just like, and again.
And he hugs her. I mean, or like kisses her hand. It's just really sweet. And then at that point, I think it's like kind of gives her the confidence, like, okay, I am as good as these guys. They look up to me just as much as I look up to them. And
yeah,
kind of, and then the other propelling forwards her, she plays against Borgov, and
yeah,
it comes to an adjournment.
Another adjournment, but she's playing well, you know, like she hasn't made any mistakes. Neither is he, but it's like this really good
and
game.
Towns is there, he's a reporter, and he's there covering the story, and so she, because she has to go to Russia alone, she doesn't have anybody there
right.
with her, and so he kind of starts helping her, like, you know, go over the board and figure out what to do, and she gets a call the day, the morning of, before the adjournments to resume, and it's literally all of her, like, past lovers, past chess, like, confidants that she's beaten
Beltic's
over the years.
There, Benny's there, all the twins are there, all of his chess friends, and he said, like, you know, we saw the board in the New York Times, and they've been working for, like,
hours.
3 hours, like, trying to tell her, like, every possible way that Borgov could be
they
going.
They sit there, like, the entire day, long distance to Russia, going over every move that could possibly, every move and counter move that she could possibly make.
Yeah, and again,
it's so cute.
And it's one of those things where it's like she feels like she's alienated everyone in her life. And when she hears that Benny's just on the phone, because they've had a big blow up,
mm-hmm.
You know, she asks him to go to Russia, and he's like, "You wouldn't come back and like train with me because you want to go get drunk in your house. So
no
don't call me again." And so when she even just hears his voice, he doesn't even say hi or anything. He's just like, "Look, if he takes the rook, like, you know, do this."
I know.
And she's got such this look of joy on her face. And then when she hears Harry or Beltic's voice on there, you know, it's again just this big joy. And then they pan out even more. There's even more people there. It's really a genuinely touching moment.
Yeah, that's super awesome.
And then, of course, you know, the final match there with Borgov, that when the adjournment resumes, again, it's just so great because nothing is easy in this game, you know, even though she's continuing to hold her own, and, you know, this is a position Borgov's probably never been in, or at least not for a very, very long time.
He even offers her a draw, which
he never does, because he's never had to. And, you know, and a draw basically is where it's a tie. So, and many of the commentators are saying, like, oh, this would be a huge win for her.
Yeah, they'd be co-champions.
Yeah, but she decides no, she wants to say it. And there's this amazing sequence where, so he kind of like deviates from all of the various schemes that Benny and the rest have come up with during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Towns is out there thinking like, oh crap, he's not doing what we thought he would.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of like, the way I described it to you, you're going to roll your eyes, but it's like when Superman like fully harnesses all his powers in the Superman movie. She like all of a sudden like looks up at the ceiling and she sees the board.
She doesn't need the pills
or the alcohol or anything. And the music, again, Rivera's music is just swelling.
Everyone's looking at her.
Everybody
like,
keeps looking
up
at the ceiling. Yeah, it's just like, what the
hell?
And
then she looks back down and you know she has it.
Yeah, you know she's got it. And again, I try and look up who played Borgov, because I really want to call him out here. You know, like when he finally sees that, you know, it's done, that he is going to lose this, he just kind of, what's his name?
Marcin Dorochinsky.
Marcin Dorochinsky. Let's call it that. But he the way that he like looks at her when he knows that he's beat is just like this wry little side smile, and he looks at her and he says, like,
it's not anger at all.
He picks up his king and he says, the game is yours, and he holds his hand. Yeah, and then he like gives her this big hug and like applauds her right there as like everybody's going nuts and stuff, and it's so touching. And again, it's just like it's an earned culmination. It's because we've seen all of her struggles and all of the things she's had to overcome that we get to feel that joy with her.
Yeah, because she's lost to him two other times easily. I mean, he trounced her the first two times, and it's just like a, you know, it's almost like a fatherly thing, like
almost,
you know, the way he looks at her, like, yes, okay,
yes,
you
like, know, so, and honestly, like they sprinkle these interviews throughout the series with him where he's just like, yeah, I don't know how much longer I can keep playing because you know, I've been playing for decades here, and you know, there's a younger generation, but I'm gonna keep going as long as I can. And that's the attitude that he has to have as the Russian champion, because they didn't really get to deviate from the, you know, pro-Russian message a lot back then. But it's just really there. But I know that you truly, really loved the ending of this whole thing, of how it kind of culminated in the final shots.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's getting ready to leave, and her kind of handler is telling her all the events that she has to attend now because she's the champion.
Yeah,
you know,
with like talking points too about how it's beating Russia is huge on their own.
She kind of just asked to get out of the car, and she goes in through the park, and earlier while she was in Russia noticed all these old men playing chess together in the park,
like dozens and dozens.
Yeah,
of
and she walks through the park. She just like kind of walks through, then they one by one start to notice her, and they all kind of get up and circle her, and they're all, Harmon, it's Harmon. They're so happy. They're shaking her hand and hugging her, and then one man looks at her and like gestures like to sit down.
And then
she kind of sets up the pieces, and then it's definitely a mirror image of her and Scheibel in the beginning.
And the guy even kind of looks like an older version of Scheibel.
She's kind of back to her roots, and she just kind of to play chess for enjoyment. Now.
And that's what, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the thing that Scheibel said to her too, right? Just let's play. And that's like, and again, just a great full circle there, but also, you know, just a statement about like, there's all, and especially back then in real life when it was, you know, like the Bobby Fischer and the other Russian champions and stuff, there's such this animosity and like, you know, such this, like, you have to beat them because we have to beat communism in every way. You know, the Russian champions can't win and stuff. And I love that the statement that this makes, you know, she's walking through this Russian village with these guys who've lived through so many histories of Russian upheaval, and they just love playing chess, and it's just loving playing a game, and they don't care that this American's beaten their champion.
The entire time that she's there, everyone's very accepting of her. They like love her.
Yeah, she's like turned into this huge celebrity. There's people wanting her autograph all the time out there. But I just love that it's just like all these guys are just out there. They're just pleased to see somebody who is as great at chess, and they, you know, like is just there among them.
It's a really fitting end. You know, it's like she's gotten through her stumbling block. She's won. And then it's just kind of like back to your roots, like playing chess because you love it and you enjoy it. And just, it's just super sweet the way they embrace her and the music swells. And then she's just like, let's play.
Yeah. And it's fine. You get the sense like she's finally happy. She finally has him. You're finally happy. Look, we've talked about this. We didn't want to give everything away because we want you to go watch this. You wouldn't think a 7-part miniseries on Netflix about chess is going to be the thing that is going to excite you and make you really want to watch entertainment again, but trust us, it is.
Hey, 2020, you know, you got to take what you can get, and this, I'm kidding. No, it's great. It really is. It's just a wonderful, well done. It's exciting. It's a great character study.
Great acting.
It's really, really good.
It's really good.
I really liked it. I'm kind of sad that it's done.
I know, right? I just want to go back and watch more. All right. Well, that's going to do it. Go watch The Queen's Gambit on Netflix. It's going to be there for a while. It flows by. It flows by. It doesn't take long. The episodes really move.
Yeah, it always
really
takes us forever to watch stuff because, you know, kids.
Yeah.
But we got through this in like 3 days, 4 days.
Yeah.
I think we started
it's
on Friday.
Really good. We have about an hour of free time a day. So,
because our son gets up like 9 times a night. So we like watch 15 minutes, pause, go put him back in bed, watch 15 minutes. So we're like, Veterans Day, he's in daycare. Our little one's asleep. Go.
We are watching.
Go.
So please go watch The Queen's Gambit. It is on Netflix. Again, just a fantastic thing. Anything else you want to call out before we say bye?
No, just, you know, enjoy. Please,
absolutely.
Enjoy.
So if you want to find more from the Frower Network.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
If you want to find more from us, go to that was maybe our worst one.
Funny.
Go to nprillinois.org/program/front-row-network or to thefrontrownetwork.com. Find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, The Front Row Network, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. And if you want to see my personal musings, at jgeck, J-G-O-E-C-K, on Twitter. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Full Disclosure. Thank you so much for listening. For The Front Row Network, I'm Jeremy Geckner.
I'm Sarah Baltus-Fitch-Geckner.
And we will see you in the front row. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from The Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for The Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.